I'm Jewish.
I'm so Jewish.
I'm Jewish.
I'm Jewish.
A lot of people say, I'm Jewish, I'm proud of being Jewish. First thing I ask them is, why?
I'm Jewish. Make something of it.
Okay, thanks for joining us. We now resume our conversation with Rabbi Eli Hersher. He is with Stephen S. Weiss Temple in Los Angeles, a very large Reform congregation. And we start off with the topic of conversion.
When I help prepare someone for conversion, I indicate to that person that they're not going to be recognized by the entire Jewish world by virtue of the fact that a Reform rabbi is doing the conversion. The issue is not, within Orthodoxy, the issue is not what was the process leading toward conversion, but who was the rabbi and who were the witnesses for it. And they have to be Orthodox from an Orthodox position. That is, they have to be rabbis who are kashrut observant, Shabbat observant, to the extent that an Orthodox rabbi would be, which usually means an Orthodox rabbi. That's true in the conservative movement. The Orthodoxy will not accept converts of anyone other than Orthodox rabbis. I let them know that, and I indicate to them the option of an Orthodox conversion. Not with me, but very, very, very rarely will anyone do that, because in order to do it, to some degree, they'll have to be dishonest. If they're not going to observe Shabbat entirely according to Jewish law, or observe kashrut, or other mitzvot, then they can't convert with an Orthodox rabbi, because an Orthodox rabbi will ask them those questions, and they'd have to be less than truthful with that rabbi. I've said to people, you know, that you don't want to begin a conversion with that kind of lack of integrity. If you're going to do it with an Orthodox rabbi, then you should become Orthodox. And that's why few will do it. No one wants to think of his conversion as lacking integrity, and it shouldn't. So they know going in what the issues are. Those issues today, assuming they continue to live their lives in America, particularly, will most likely never affect them. That's not the case in Israel. If a child of a woman convert to Judaism who might decide at age 20 to go live in Israel will be accepted as a Jew in Israel according to the law of return, but will not be married there by Orthodox rabbis. And they're the only ones allowed legally to do those marriages. That's a highly unlikely scenario for most of the people I meet with.
We now talk about Reform conversion and what the minimum requirements are, or what the minimum requirements of practice and study are expected of a convert before they are accepted as members of the Jewish people.
The basic minimum requirement in the Reform movement isn't set by the movement. That is the minimum requirement for study. So that every rabbi or every Beit Din will make decisions about what's an appropriate curriculum and what's an appropriate length of study. Within the Reform movement, there is a commission on conversion. They set guidelines, but not policy. In my own practice, there are a few elements. The most important one is learning, but it's two different kinds of learning. It's learning in a classroom and learning with books and learning with the rabbi, content, and then there's the experiential dimension of the learning, of being in the synagogue, of participating in the activities of the community, of celebrating the holidays, of having a Passover Seder, of lighting Shabbat candles, observing Shabbat. The experiential learning is as important as the purely academic learning. The ideal is if someone's in no hurry and we've got a year. The reason that I like a year is because it allows someone entering Judaism to have the full cycle of the holidays, to have experienced the entire Jewish calendar. Most Introduction to Judaism classes in Los Angeles are around 18 weeks. Those 18 weeks cover Jewish history, Jewish thought, ritual, etc., and are good introductions, but in 18 weeks, you're not going to learn close to 4,000 years of Jewish experience. So that these classes are rightly called introductions, and I let people know that. That is, that this is the beginning of hopefully a lifelong process of Jewish learning and Jewish experience. When I have that year, first of all, I have no doubt about sincerity or commitment. For someone to commit to that length of time of learning and reading and classes and observance, they're well on their way. There are times where it'll be 6 months because they'd like to do this before they get married, and I'm flexible there. The issue for me becomes that they've done the classes and had Jewish experiences in the course of that time. And then it comes to the question of sincerity, which is very hard to measure. You can't give a test in it. You get to know people, and to be truthful, I don't think I'm all that gullible, and having said that, I don't believe that I've really ever converted anyone who wasn't sincere. Because what I've told them at the beginning is, don't do this. Don't do this for anybody else. Take the classes. If you're going to raise your kids Jewish and you're taking the classes, I'll do your wedding. So don't convert for me. Don't convert for the person you're marrying. Don't convert for his or her family because they'd like to see it. Do this for you. I once had a couple come in to talk to me many years ago. And the woman was Jewish, the man was not. First words to come out of her mouth when they sat down was, "I'm Jewish, we're getting married, and he's going to convert." And I said, "Whoa, stop. Does he get to speak for himself?" And the more I talked to him, the more I saw that he wasn't ready to make that kind of commitment. And I don't know if she was telling me what she wanted to have happen, what her parents wanted to have, or what she thought I wanted to hear. But I slowed her down and I said, "As much as I'd like that, what I really want is that the learning take place, and you, the Jewish partner, are going to participate in that as well." They did that. They really liked it. And he wasn't ready. And I did their wedding. This is at least 20 years ago. And I saw them. I've seen them over the years since. And they're living a Jewish life. He never converted. The children have been given their Jewish education and bar and bat mitzvah, and observance in the home, but the conversion didn't take place. Now, the ideal for me would be that the conversion would have taken place. And many others get to that point, and it's deeply meaningful because it's not under pressure of a wedding. But I looked at him, I knew that he couldn't do it with sincerity, and therefore I wouldn't want to have him do it. How's that tested? In conversation, and in behavior, in action, you know when someone's going through the motions, especially when you've told them, don't try to impress me. You'll impress me by being honest.
We now discuss the not so uncommon phenomenon of the convert to Judaism beginning to take Judaism more seriously than the born Jew and the repercussions of that.
It's often the case that the person converting to Judaism takes his or her Judaism a lot more seriously than the born Jew. Part of that is certainly due to the learning process. Often the born Jew hasn't really taken learning anything seriously since bar mitzvah. And to end up with a Jewish education that comes to a conclusion at age 13 is, and people to be proud of it, that my kid became bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah and then stopped, is one of the sad dimensions of Jewish life. So that's the experience of many Jews. We're trying to turn that around, trying to change that. So here is a non-Jewish person who takes classes, who's reading books, who's meeting with the rabbi. And in addition to the learning, that person is saying, I'm serious here. I'm making a life choice. You were born into this. I'm kind of choosing to be born into it. And therefore, that's why it's not unusual for the convert, the Jew by choice, to take his or her Judaism more seriously, because they made the choice as an adult. The ideal would be if every Jew was a Jew by choice, if every Jew would examine, study, and make, kind of reaffirm my accident of being born into the Jewish people, would choose it as an adult. I think that what often happens is Jews by choice spark that in their partners. That's why it's important for potential converts to study with a partner. And that would then be the case also in relationships, whether both partners are Jewish or not. And there's a difference of opinion on depth of seriousness about learning and about observance and about synagogue attendance. When you have husband and wife who, one of whom has become inspired to live a deeper Jewish life than the other, and there's resistance on the part of the other, those are moments in which I think it's a really good idea for them to seek some counseling and for that counseling to be with a rabbi. Because these questions sometimes are not just about religious observance and depth of it. Sometimes they're the questions about the relationship itself, how people negotiate other differences in their relationship, power questions that go beyond purely religion, to figure out, are we really talking about what we think we're talking about? But if you've got a solid relationship and people are open to really talking about this, then my hope would be, and it's been my experience, that a rabbi can have some influence in helping to break down some resistance. I've sometimes made this as, and maybe it's oversimplifying, but if you've got two partners and one of them absolutely loves classical music and loves going to concerts and is passionate about it, and the other knows nothing about classical music and has never had an appreciation of it, but the classical music lover says, you know, we're married. We don't have to be alike, but this is a really important part of my life. You know, try to share a little bit of it with me. Don't go with me as often as I do to Disney Hall. Come with me. Take a music appreciation class with me. I don't mean to trivialize, but I people, hopefully in relationships, will do that for each other. I found resistant partners ready to say that, yeah, that's not demanding so much of me. And if they're open to doing some learning, some of that resistance can be broken down. It's not simple. I don't have an easy answer for it. For some, it remains a real problem, and partners live in a Jewish household where one is taking it very seriously and the other is just not there. Doesn't make for... Forget religion, it doesn't make for the most fulfilling of relationships. And that's why you would hope that there would be some motivation around the relationship for an openness in this area as well as others. But I think it's an area for some good pastoral counseling, at least.
We asked him about the origin of the term "not yet" when it comes to Jewish practice.
One of the great Jewish thinkers of the 20th century was Franz Rosenzweig, German Jewish thinker, who, when asked whether he observed a particular ritual, a particular commandment, if he didn't observe it, he wouldn't say no, he would say not yet. That is, he would leave open the possibility that he would continue to grow, continue to evolve as a Jew, and that one day the answer might be yes.
And if you haven't yet subscribed, now is the time to do so. Tell your friends about us and share this with everyone. We want to hear a review too, so write a review and let us know how we're doing. We have one more segment coming up with Rabbi Hirscher, and you're not going to want to miss it. Thank you for listening. Thank you. And remember, shop at our sponsor, Hazaka.com. That's Hazakah.com. Hazaka.com, Jewish games that feed the brain. Thanks for listening.
All right, that's it. Hot as hell, Jay.